we've been speaking a lot lately about Hetzer Mechira, and in most of our minds, Hetzer Mechira relates to whether or not the land of Eretz Yisrael can be sold for Shemitah purposes to non-Jews. But there's a second kind of Hetzer Mechira, which also appears in Poskim, that is even more suspect in certain ways than the other one. And that is the notion of Jewish businesses selling their businesses to non-Jews for Shabbos and Yontif, so that the business can continue to operate during this period of time. This question comes up a lot in connection with businesses that are open all week, particularly in neighborhoods where maybe the workers expect to be off on Sunday, and yet the business has to be open for 6 days. Certain types of businesses, like the hotel industry, running apartment buildings, things like that, you can't really shut down operations on Shabbos, so the question comes up a lot. Even in food industries, it sometimes comes up in connection with factories that are owned by Jews in certain neighborhoods, where they give hashgachos to I don't know which neighborhoods, to a restaurant that might be owned by a Jew, like a bagel place that's open on Shabbos. It would also raise various questions. The major questions, you know, relate to the fact that, well, you're not allowed to work on Shabbos. Now, this obviously relates to malachas d'oraisa that a person might do in the course of their business, but even doing business in general is the nisus chora, is just a masa matan, generally assumed to be usur, as Rashi writes, mishum shema yichtov, you may come to write. Whatever the reason, it's definitely usur. The Ramban in Parshas Emor says that if you engage in business on Shabbos, so that could be a violation of a mitzvah of an isser deraisa, a mitzvah etze deraisa of Shabbaton, that you have to have an affirmative observance of Shabbos. And if you treat it like a regular day in terms of business, so you're violating that affirmative obligation of Shabbaton. It also comes up a lot in connection with a certain type of business that even from Yidden are known to engage in on a regular basis, particularly in these parts, known as operating nursing homes. There is a prevalence of the practice to sell nursing homes on Shabbos as well to non-Jews in order to avoid these types of problems. As we'll see a little bit later, this is a practice that has encountered serious opposition and questions in recent times. There's a sefer that came out recently called Commerce and Shabbos, maybe Commerce on Shabbos, Commerce and Shabbos, written by Rabbi Yosef Kushner, who is the son-in-law of Rabbi Shlomo Miller from Toronto, in which he raises all of his father's objections to the notion of selling nursing homes on Shabbos, and comes up with his own proposal how to do it, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. So this was an issue. Yes.
And this, will that also cover the Basar Chodesh or Hanah in nursing homes? That actually comes up a lot.
Yeah, well, it doesn't cover an Isser Hanah if you have, you know, Mamish Basa V'cholov. It doesn't matter if it was generated during Shabbos. It's still,
no,
you know,
necessary
to get enough from it.
Because there are the nursing homes do Basa V'cholov, and they say, well, the Goyish partner of my Shabbos God is hopefully taking that.
Ah, I see. Yeah, he didn't explicitly discuss that, but that would be part of the issue. And probably the proposed solution that we'll get to will not cover that issue, no. This came up a lot around 100 years ago, 200 years ago. A lot of the poskim in Europe discussed this because there were a lot of people, a lot of Jews who had businesses where if they would have shut down the businesses on Shabbos, then they would have had to close down, and they would have lost their entire enterprise. So the question was whether there was room to be makel, and it came up in two different contexts. One is that if you have an akum, can you go into business together with an akum, even though it'll be open on Shabbos? That's a little bit less problematic, as we'll see from the Gemara. The more problematic case is you're going to bring in an akum just for the purpose of being able to justify running the business on Shabbos. There's an additional problem that has cropped up, particularly in recent shuvos, that is written about a lot by Rav Moshe and some other recent poskim, and that's the notion of having business partnerships with Mechalalei Shabbos. There it's not an issue that you're going to bring in a Mechala Shabbos in order to justify doing work on Shabbos, but it becomes more problematic to enter into a business enterprise with a Mechala Shabbos. So I don't know that we'll have time today to get around to the Mechala Shabbos issue. If we do have time, I'll try to touch upon it. We also probably won't have time today to touch upon the whole question of internet industries and to what degree one is allowed to enable them to continue functioning on Shabbos. Yes, Hashem, maybe next time that'll be our next topic. Now, with respect to the notion of selling a business to a non-Jew on Shabbos, there are postim who are makel. Based on the Divrei Chaim was perhaps the most prominent in this regard, Chelek Aleph Siman Zayin, where he proposes, he says that really I think that there is an atmosphere of Chilul Shabbos that's become rampant, and if we allow these types of kulos, it's going to be a disaster, so therefore I always stayed away from allowing any leniencies. But then I found out that the Minhag Olam among my friends, the other poskim, is to be Mekel, and therefore I decided to be Mekel too. And then he tells you exactly how to go about designing a Shtar Mechira for Shabbos. But one of the concerns was that people will simply not be able to make do, and as a result, it might lead to rampant Chilul Shabbos if we're not going to allow for kulos. So nowadays, it's kind of interesting because we have. Both an improvement and less of a concern and more of a concern. We have less of a concern nowadays in the sense that to the extent, as we'll see, that some of the heterim are based upon a concern that b'makom seda, if you're not going to be lenient, then the Jews themselves are going to be mechal Shabbos. And nowadays, Baruch Hashem, the community has become stronger, I think, in terms of Shabbos observance. We give ourselves Yashikayach in that respect, so it's less of a concern that people are going to be Mechal Shabbos. So on the one hand, there's less of a concern that as a result of providing Heterim is going to lead to an excuse to be Mechal Shabbos, because one of the concerns was the Jew will sell the business and then, he'll sit there pretending, because the Taz has a really very bold heter, which the Taz says that the Jewish co-owner is allowed to actually sit there in the business on Shabbos, and not for the purpose of doing any business or authorizing anything, just to make sure that nothing is stolen by his non-Jewish partner, just to be a sort of a mashkiach. Like we have our mashkichim who walk into businesses sometimes on Shabbos and Yontif, just to make sure, those that are open, to make sure that everything is going okay and they shouldn't have a false sense of security, that they could do whatever they want on those days. So the Jewish owner would kind of like a self-mashkiach to make sure that nothing would be stolen from the business. And there was a concern that maybe they would do much more than just sit there, and they would actually participate in the business itself. Of Moshe Feinstein writes explicitly that that's one of the reasons he was uncomfortable with the heterim, because he was uncomfortable with the Taz's heter, that the Jewish partner could just sit there on Shabbos, because he'll probably participate in the business as well. So that's less of a concern nowadays. On the other hand, the notion of being matir, because otherwise it's going to lead to greater Chilul Shabbos on the part of the Jew, is also less of a concern. So therefore, the greater amount of Shmir Shabbos that kind of cuts both ways in terms of whether it would lead us to be more mekel or less mekel bisman hazeh. So there are really three concerns that arise from business enterprises that do operate on Shabbos when there is a Jewish ownership in part or in whole of the Jewish enterprise. One is shlichus akum, that even if you're not doing the work yourself, there's, as Rashi writes in Shabbos Kufin Gimel, there's an idea of shlichus akum l'chumah, that if the akum is doing the work on behalf of the Jewish partner, so it's considered like the Jewish partner is responsible for the work that's being done, it's at least an issa d'rabbanan. The second is sechora, as I said, you're doing mekach u'memker. If you're guilty of mekach u'memker, that's an issa d'rabbanan. And the third is that there is an issa schar shabbos, of taking compensation on with respect to work that was done on Shabbos. And the way in which Schar Shabbos is typically avoided when it is permissible for operations to be open on Shabbos, or for somebody to take remuneration for services that were provided on Shabbos is if it's behavlah. If you're somehow able to say you're not taking for Shabbos, you're taking for like a week, and it just so happens that the week includes Shabbos. Now there are Mimalakum is really included. Yeah, I mean there are three different reasons for Mimalakum, but the shiur is not really about a Mimalakum. It's what the Shlichus Akum is essentially a manifestation of a Mimalakum. But the point is, a Mimalakum is a little bit of a misnomer, meaning that it sounds a little bit like, oh, you need to do an amira in order for there to be some sort of a prohibition. But the reality is that if it's understood that the that you want the Akum to do work for you, you have some sort of an arrangement where it's clear that the deal is that the Akum is going to do work for you, for your business, the on Shabbos, so even if you didn't actually say anything, it's still going to be an issue of Shlichus. Okay, or Shlichus Akum potentially. So there are four heterim that are quoted, that appear in various places, and it's important to just kind of divide them up, because I think the sugya is a little bit of a confusing one. The sources are a little bit sparse. I've tried to identify the main ones here in the Maror Mekumos. It's really one main Gemara, and a little bit of Tosos and a Mordechai that figures very prominently in the discussion. But it's a little bit of a muddle. So I think it's important to understand sort of the four different areas, the potential heter when it comes to having work done on Shabbos. So, and these four areas are identified very succinctly, very nicely in the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos. And the four areas are, number one, Mechira, the idea of selling your business to a goy on Shabbos. So he lists them in sort of descending order of the best methodology. So Mechira is the best methodology. It's just not yours anymore. You sell it entirely. The reality is it's usually the worst methodology, because if the mechira is just a sham and a farce and a harama, so then it really doesn't accomplish anything. Not only that, but there's no real basis for it. In any of the Gemaras, in any of the sources, all the other heterim have a basis. Mechira is something that was sort of devised later on. The second, which does have a clear source in the Gemara, is chiris, that you have like a field, you have a melkot, something like that, and you rent it out to a goy on Shabbos. The question is, when are you allowed to rent it out? When are you not allowed to rent it out? The third, which is also very explicit in the Gemara, is that you enter into a shutfus, l'chatchila. You enter into a shutfus with a goy, and the Gemara says that's hetzel gomer, hetzel l'chatchila. This isn't a bidiyevit. It's a hetzel l'chatchila. I have a shutfus, so everyone understands that I'm in the business with the goy. It's like I used to work for a law firm, Cleary Gottlieb, okay? They were open on Shabbos. It was Cleary. The rest of the week was Gottlieb. You can argue. So everybody knows that there's a goy who's in the business, and if it's open on Shabbos, so that must be his doing. So shutfus, as long as you have the requisite understanding that is articulated, hitnu, between the Jew and the non-Jewish partner at the outset of the partnership, then it's really hetzegomer. If it's stipulated that the Shabbos work is going to be done by the goy, so then that's not really a problem at all. And if it's well known that the goy is a part of the partnership, it doesn't matter if everybody knows that the work is being done on Shabbos. There's no marizayin, because you know that that there's a goy in the partnership. And the fourth heter is what we might call kablonos, or I think the better term is kibolos, and I'll just elaborate upon that a little bit, which is that if the goy, let's say, is an employee, he's an actual employee of the Jew. You haven't sold the company, you haven't rented the company to him, and you're not in partnership with him either. However, he doesn't have to work on Shabbos. There's no explicit benefit for the Jewish owner that the non-Jew is working on Shabbos. And it's a daita d'nafshei ka'avid. When he does work on Shabbos, he's working on Shabbos for his own benefit, for his own purposes. So if you're able to, like for example, this comes up in the context of classical kablanos. Classical kablanos is that you give a garment to a non-Jew to sew, and the non-Jew takes it home. If he does it in your home, so it might be a marisayin problem. It would be a marisayin problem. But if he does it in his own home, in the privacy of his own home, so he could do it on Erev Shabbos, he could do it on Sunday, he chooses to do the malacha on Shabbos, so that's his business, because he wants to go to the football game on Sunday. He heard that there's a great new kosher stand, whatever, you know, he wants to try it out, go to the football field on Sunday. So on Shabbos he does the work, but he's doing it only for his own benefit, so that's perfectly fine as well. And the question is, how far do you extend this heter kibolus, that in the context, we call it kibolus in the context of a worker who's going to be getting something for his own selfish purposes by virtue of working on Shabbos, but not because he's doing it specifically for you. And all of these different heterim are circumscribed. They all have to be done in a way that satisfies various criteria, but these are essentially the different heterim. And it's a little confusing. The main simanim in Shulchan Aruch that discuss this are at the beginning of Orach Chaim Hilchos Shabbos. They're Reish Mem Gimel, Reish Mem Dal, and Reish Mem Hey. And sometimes the terms that are used in one siman mean something different than what they mean in the other siman. And sometimes they'll be good in one siman and bad in the other siman. So it's a very confusing limit in that sense. Like, for example, the first siman, Reish Mem Gimel, deals with renting out fields and bathhouses and things of that sort, where schirus is like a good word. Meaning I'm renting it out and the non-Jew is paying me for the rental and he gets all the benefits, all the profits during that day. That's generally pretty good, except, you know, if it's something like a Merchatz where people are going to know that it belongs to the Jew anyway, so there's the Maris Ayin issue. However, if it's like a Sada, so there we tend to be more makel if it's something which is straight Sfiris, for example. On the other hand, Sfiris, when dealing with getting a job done, has a totally different connotation. So Reish Mem Dalid, which deals with skewus in the context of getting a job done, so there skewus is a bad word. Skewus means not that I'm maskir, but I'm socher. Maskir means I'm renting out to somebody else. Socher means I'm hiring you, and I'm hiring you specifically to do the work on Shabbos. I'm hiring you for on a day-to-day basis, but one of the days which is included in the day-to-day basis happens to be Shabbos, so that is problematic, and that runs afoul of having work done for you on Shabbos through a non-Jew. Similarly, the word kablanos, when used in Siman Reish Mem Gimel, is a bad word, and when used in Siman Reish Mem Dalet, it's a good word. When used in Reish Mem Gimel, kablanos stands for the proposition that I'm paying the non-Jew to work on my field, but I'm getting all of the revach, I'm getting all of the benefit for the work that he is doing on Shabbos, so that is problematic. And in Reish Mem Dalet, the kablanos means that rather than hiring somebody for the day, I'm hiring somebody for the job, and he could do the job whenever he wants. So therefore, it becomes a good word. So therefore, it's a little bit confusing just to, you know, parse out the dinim over here, but that's kind of like the general overview. So what are the main sources here? The main sources are the Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis and Chof Beis Amud Aleph. Chof Beis Amud Aleph, it gives you the basic partnership scheme. There were Ovdei Kochavim who were working together with a Yisrael partner, and where the business was such that they would work on Shabbos, the Yisrael would work on Sunday, and the rest of the week they would kind of, you know, work together. So they came in front of Rava, and Rava said that this is perfectly okay. Akashi was asked by Ravina, but we learned that it's not okay unless they stipulated up front that the non-Jew would work on Shabbos, and therefore the Jewish partner would have nothing to do with Shabbos. If they didn't stipulate up front, then it has to be assumed that when he's working on Shabbos, he's doing it as kind of like a shliach of the Jewish partner. And if at the end they actually say, okay, Shabbos was this much and Sunday was that much and now we're going to split it between us, or you'll take Shabbos and I'll take Sunday, so that's a problem because it sounds like a tit for tat. So the answer was that the Sof Iglai Milsa, that the Hitnu Mekara Havu, that the case that came in front of Rava that he permitted was in fact permissible. Why was it permissible? Because since they had the initial Tanai, once they make the initial condition when they establish the partnership that the Shabbos will belong solely to the non-Jew, what does that mean? What that means effectively is just important to spell it out. It means the Shutras doesn't include Shabbos. It means that not that I'm a Shutras and you do Shabbos and I do Sunday, but the Shutras excludes Shabbos and Sunday. We have a Shutras the rest of the week. Shabbos and Sunday are excluded. Sunday, it's only mine, and Shabbos, it's only yours. So it's only yours, so there's a day. You can do whatever you want on the day that it's only yours. Then the question is, what if nobody mentions, there were two things. There was like one good thing and one bad thing. The good thing is, the positive
act that you can perform is to make a tanai at the beginning of the partnership. So that makes it all good. And the bad thing that you can do is if at the end you bow the cheshbon, you say, okay, this was Shabbat and this Sunday. I'm taking Sunday and you take Shabbat. So it sounds like it's a tit for tat. So the question is, what if you did neither? What if you did neither the good thing nor the bad thing? So is that okay? That's what we call stoma. The Gemara asks, what about the case of stoma? Well, you didn't stipulate up front that Shabbos is going to belong only to the goy. It's understood that, you know, he'll work on Shabbos, and it's understood that you're going to work on Sunday, but you didn't say anything explicitly, which would be a problem. But then when you split up the proceeds, you just split them up kind of like 50-50, and you didn't say, oh, this is Shabbos, this is Sunday, so there was no tit for tat explicitly mentioned. Is that okay? Is that not okay? The Rambam says, so the Gemara leaves it as a baidul ifshita. The Rambam says that it's not okay. Other Rishonim say that b'di'evid, maybe it is okay. The Ramah happens to paskin the Peshat Hefse Gadol, one is allowed to be makel under those circumstances. That's not something which we would rely upon the Chatzchila, especially given the Issa Chomer that's involved, but you know, sometimes people just forget to say anything or they don't know any better, so then there is room to be makel as long as they don't, you know, spell out explicitly this was Shabbos, this was Sunday. Are they allowed, do they have to explicitly say that, well, Shabbos over the course of the year we earned $5 million and on Sunday during the course of the year we earned $50, therefore the goy gets the $5 million and the Jew gets the $50 and the rest of, you know, the profits for the rest of the week were $300 each, so the Jew ends up really losing out tremendously? Or can I say that, well, just to ease, you know, the cheshbon, because it's kind of difficult to go through all the records and everything, so we just split the Shabbos and Sunday 50-50. So are they allowed to do that? So the answer is yes, they're allowed to do that. You're allowed to, Rav Moshe insists in a number of places. What his source is, I have no idea. But Rav Moshe insists, like, this is the most important point of all of this entire union, that if it is impossible to calculate exactly how much of the profit was attributable to Shabbos and how much of the profit was attributable to Sunday, or whatever it was the other day that was selected, so under those circumstances, it would not be permissible to split it 50-50. You can only split it 50-50 if conceivably you could have determined what the profit was on Shabbos and what the profit was on Sunday, even though the Magen Avraham, Sifkat and Beis, seems to say explicitly otherwise. But Moshe interprets the Magen Avraham as saying, the Magen Avraham meant that sometimes it's just really, really difficult to do it, so you're not going to bother, but if you really tried very hard, you'd be able to. The reason, Rav Moshe says, that it is important to theoretically have the ability to make the calculation is because of the fact that otherwise it would be a clear harama, that the whole thing was really just one giant partnership from the beginning. Yes?
It would be a retail store, right? So at the end of the day, you're able to see the slips. And
retail stores should be very easy to tally how much business there was a generator on each of the days. Right. So retail should not be a problem at all, according to Rav Moshe, even if at the end they decided that they're going to split those days 50-50.
How would you split Shabbos? You know exactly what he made on Shabbos. So it's not a hard thing to figure out.
Right.
So then you wouldn't be able to do the 50-50.
No, if you can figure out what the person made on Shabbos by looking at the records and so forth, then you're allowed to just say, okay, even though we could have figured it out, but nonetheless, just to make things easier, let's split a 50-50. Or, alternatively, the goy can say, I'm going to give you a matana. You know, I'll give you a matana of, it's true, I don't have to give you, you know, the full profit that was generated on Shabbos, but you know what, I like you, so I'll split a 50-50. That's considered to be permissible. Why is this all permissible? It's all permissible because of the fact that when the partner was set up, it was set up in such a way that the Jewish partner has no shaychus whatsoever to what's going on Shabbos, okay? And that is proven by the fact that you can potentially isolate Shabbos and you can potentially isolate the prophets on Shabbos. If it would be impossible, then there's more of a concern that the whole thing was just a giant ruse. Yes?
It's like in a legal firm, for example. It's very hard to know what you make on a particular day. You make how many over time?
No, if you're in business, so you calculate, you know, when the receivables come in, when the, you know, when the bills come in, when the bills go out, these things. I'm sorry?
You do the contingency cases. There are kind of things that you do which are hard to know, you know.
So Rav Moshe says that in the event it would really be impossible to calculate, so then you'd be up the creek. Then you wouldn't be able to rely upon this hetzer. So Rav Moshe says. Now, the other the Gemara is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Chofa Aleph on the base. It came beforehand, but I wanted to start with the actual Shutfas case, and that's the case of the Schiris, where Rav Shimon Gamliel says that you're not allowed to be Socher, even though you're renting out the Merchas completely, so you don't have any possession of it over Shabbos. And obviously you'd have to rent it out for more than Shabbos. The post can point out that it would be a Schar Shabbos issue, so you'd have to rent it out from, say, a half hour before Shabbos until a half hour after Shabbos, so that there not be a Schar Shabbos issue. You don't have the same Schar Shabbos issue with respect to a Shutfus, but you have the Schar Shabbos issue with respect to a rental case, or even when you're selling the Yom, if you're selling only for Shabbos, so there also, we assume that there's a Schar Shabbos issue. But even if you do it of the Havlah, there's still going to be a problem of what? Mishinikra al Shemo. So here we have the introduction of the notion of Maris, of Maris Ayin. And the Gemara says that you don't have the same issue of Maris Ayin with respect to a Sada, with respect to a field. Why don't you have the same issue of Maris Ayin with respect to the renting out of a field? So the Gemara says you don't have the issue there because with respect to a field, everybody knows that there are profit sharing arrangements when you rent out a field to a non-Jew, Arista Aristuse Ka'avid, and therefore, since there are profits, since everybody knows that he'll be getting either the entire profit or he'll be getting a good portion of the profits, therefore it would be permissible under those circumstances that where that you're renting out the field to a non-Jew on Shabbos. So we see that in terms of rental arrangements, and this would also presumably be true with respect to mechira arrangements too. If something was known to belong to a Jew, and now you're renting it out, or you're even selling it to a non-Jew, you have to be worried about any kind of industry where the people will still think that it is owned by the Jew during Shabbos, and that the Jew is getting all of the profits on Shabbos. So only in a case where it is befarhesio, where it's befirsum, that it's known that the non-Jew either has acquired it on Shabbos or that the non-Jew is getting a percentage of the profits, would it be permissible? And there's a whole deal over here to what degree we can rely on the heter altogether of renting something out on Shabbos. If you look at the Tosfos here in source number 3, I'll skip it for now, the machlokas between Rav Natan and the Ri regarding whether you're allowed to hire contractors to build a house and they do the work on Shabbos, where Rav Natan said, well, since, you know, they don't have to do the work on Shabbos, that would be okay. And the Ri held that it's not okay, Beni Yerushalmi, that the Avodah B'Mechubar is never okay, but that's not immediately germane to our discussions. Let's move to the last sheet of the Ram over here. The Ram, you know, St. Tom, the Lahachim Mutabarisa Sadeh, why is the resus with a field permissible if you're renting out a field and the person who gets it is receiving a portion of the profits? The kimin she'eino notah maos b'scharo, because of the fact that he's not getting money, elo what is he getting? Elo notah b'guf hakarka, because he's actually taking a profits from the field itself. Therefore, what's the heter? So the heter is dami l'shutaf, that whenever you're able to have a situation in which it appears like a partnership, meaning that the feeling isn't the Jew is getting the benefit of the work that's being done on Shabbos, but the non-Jew is getting the direct benefit from the malacha itself, as opposed to, say, you know, he's a daily worker, but he's getting the benefit of the malacha itself, so then that is permissible. But the kablon is the bias. But even if he's building a house where he's getting the money, the reason why we're more machmir is because he doesn't have the appearance of being a partner. So everybody just says, so the Jew's house is being built by a goy on Shabbos. Therefore, it seems that the heter, even with respect to renting, is based on creating an appearance of partnership of some sort. Now, the Mordechai, this is a very important source, because Mordechai is quoted by everybody to justify everything, meaning that whatever it is that we do permit to take place usually starts with a discussion of the Mordechai. The Mordechai said, well, as a general matter, where even if I give work, let's say I give work even that's not a binyan, that I'm not having a house built for me on Shabbos, but I'm just, you know, giving over some clothes for a tailor to fix, and he happens to do it on Shabbos, so that's permissible. But if I actually do it in such a way in which the person is either a schir yom, that they have to work every single day, and one of those days is Shabbos, so then he's working for me, and therefore that's aser, or where I'm giving him a specific job to do, but it's clear that I want that job to be done on Shabbos, where, for example, I am giving a schiris to somebody, okay, that I want him to do something that belongs to me, but it's clear that I want him to do it on Shabbos, so that's going to be problematic, okay? even if he's going to get a share of the profits, it's still going to be problematic if I specifically want him to do that on Shabbos. So the Mordechai says that there's an exception to this rule, and he talks about a case of taxes where there was a Jew who had the right to be a tax collector. And he says that in this particular case, b'kibolas mutter, as long as the non-Jew is going to get a portion of the profits, then that's going to be permissible. I'll turn to the next page. Okay. The Jew doesn't want to lose his right to collect the taxes, so he rents it out to the non-Jew, and he retains his right because he would lose a lot from his investment if he's not able to collect it all. So he says, I'm still going to collect a lot of what you collect on Shabbos, but you'll get like one out of every 100. So what's this? You can get one out of every 100. How is that going to be sufficient? So the answer is, number one, that the goy is a daita d'nafshei ka'avid. But then the question is, in Timtzalomer, that maybe that this case is kovei malach v'enoch v'lasos rak v'shabbos when a nidon zesh kovei l'itzal mechas v'shabbos mikomok of that. Here you're actually asking him to do a work that's only going to be on Shabbos. So he brings a raya from Perek Mishehepshich where you're allowed to give your wallet to a non-Jew at the advent of Shabbos to carry for you on Shabbos if you're not in a place with an Eruv, but Malcolm stay the Shari Le Rabbanan, because otherwise we'll worry that you're going to do Hotzah yourself. So here too as well, Ilo Shari Le Yasi Kochorav, if you're not going to allow this, then the person is going to lose all of his money. So Beis Yosef asks, maybe this is something which was, why do we allow this? He says maybe the reason it was permitted was because it was only Nisa Darabanan. So he says no, even if the goy would do a Nisa Daraisa, it's still the same issue. We would never allow it if not for the fact that it's Mamakam Hefzed. Whether it's an Issa Daraisa, whether it's an Issa Darabanan, it has to be Mamakam Hefzed in order for us to allow it. But then he asks another question, what about Maris Ayin, number four? Im Tomar Vahakabos Mechas Milsa Defarhetsu V'chol Kaigam No Lekaman Deshari. If it's something which is public, so then we don't allow it. Like, for example, doing a binyan. We don't allow on Shabbos. So he answers that maybe, that maybe when there is a clear hefsed, if you're not going to allow this type of an arrangement of profit sharing, then we're going to allow it under those circumstances, even though it's clear that the person is going to do the work on Shabbos. So that's a very, very important inyan. And based on this shita of the Mordechai, is explicated by the Beis Yosef and so forth, so the Divrei Chaim relies upon this in part to allow the whole idea of selling on Shabbos, because he says that sometimes with businesses, there would be a tremendous makom hefsed. And when there's a tremendous makom hefsed, we see that we allow things that we wouldn't allow necessarily the rest of the time, as long as, technically speaking, the business is really being operated by the Akum, or the Akum, even if he's doing it through Schiris of Yisrael, and Yisrael is getting a major part of the benefit, if he's going to get part of the benefit, then that's going to be okay as well. We look to source number six over here.
How does it make sense to you that I'm having hefsed when I had to make the shift from when I started? So who asked me to get into this business in the first place?
This wasn't a shutfus when you started. What started was that he acquired the mechus, and now if he's not going to be open on Shabbos, he's going to lose his money. So take a look at the end of the Beis Yosef, since he actually addresses this point. So Venera, this is the last four lines of the Beis Yosef. Venera Dein Devei Aram, namely the Rabbeinu Meir quoted by the Mordechai, El Bemishikvar Kana HaMechus. It's only if you already acquired the Mechus, it's Tark Lasos Takana Shoyasi Mamono. And now it's after the fact, and you have to engage in this Takana so you won't lose your money. He had to buy the mechis in the first place, because otherwise he would have lost his investment, since this is basically the collateral in which he's collecting his gold from the star of the year. But if he's only engaging in an enterprise for profit purposes, then it's going to require this type of an arrangement, we wouldn't have permitted it.
Well, Miu, talking the kids who wasn't planning to work on Shabbos.
Right, so this is what he says, the last line. Miu, Asher Gashas Kniyashari. maybe at the time in which you enter into an enterprise, and it's not premised upon Shabbos itself, it's okay. The halo avidi sir at that time, lechimati Shabbos, and then Shabbos comes along. Okay, so now you have a problem. So since Shabbos comes later, so at that point in time, we allow for this type of a heter. So, but what it seems from the Beis Yosef is that this is in fact something that is troubling. Meaning that to what degree do we rely upon these heterim if it's not the makom hefsed, and how do we define makom hefsed?
When I opened up my nursing home, I wasn't in the kitchen really on a Friday afternoon. I mean, obviously they're staying for Shabbos, so I can't say that I did it. And oh my gosh, look at that! I have to do something for Shabbos. Come Thursday afternoon, I go find the guy.
So that's what the Shevet Halevi says. The Shevet Halevi says that to enter into a business in which that you that you're going to have Shabbos issues, okay, and you don't need it in order to make a living. You're not going to starve if you don't open up this business enterprise. So there was never really a heter to open up a business enterprise under those circumstances. Now remember, this is only relying upon something like having somebody work on your behalf on Shabbos, which is like the case of the taxes. If it is a real shutfus that you enter lechatchila, not into a mecher, but you enter into a shutfus with the goy, in which what happens on Shabbos is not shayach to you at all, so then that would be heter gomer. So really, I might differ a little bit with a hierarchy that was articulated by the Piskei Tshuvas. It would seem that really shutfus should be number one in the hierarchy. Because all of the other, right? Because the shutfus, according to the Gemara, is really the cleanest. You don't have the maritain issues. You don't have the kovea malakta. The biggest problem, seriously, from what I could tell, is the kovea malakta l'shabbos problem. Because even in terms of skivus, if you're not kovea malakta l'shabbos, that you're not telling the person you have to work for me on Shabbos, or if you're sort of complete skivus where you're not getting any profit at all, that would also be okay. But if you're getting a portion of the profit and you're kind of strongly indicating the person should work on Shabbos, so that would be much more problematic, and there you have to rely upon the heter of the Mordechai, and then it comes into the question of how do I define hefsed. Okay? Now look at source number 6. This is very important as well. It could be.
Is there profit directly from Shabbos in the nursing home?
I'm sorry? That's more of a Skar Shabbos issue, okay? But the Skar Shabbos is only one of the issues. One of the issues is actually doing the malacha that needs to be done. Okay, or engaging in the actual maso matan. If you're at desk and you're processing accounts of people coming, people going, and doing any of the business. If you operate in such a way that nothing whatsoever was taking place, on Shabbos, so then you'd be in better shape, obviously. Okay. Now source number. Yeah. Okay. Now, there's a very important heter of the Ramah, which is quoted by Rav Moshe. One second. Rav Moshe points out that this whole idea of shutfus with a goy, you only have to make this whole shutfus. So he's working Shabbos and you're working Sunday. In the event that you want to be koveya, you're not going to work together the entire week. The Ramah says, the quote this from the Ran, if you're both working together the whole week, if a Shabbos uskenu you do labada, you don't tell him to work on Shabbos. He on his own decides to work on Shabbos, so that for sure is heter gomer. What's a lachloki mokol askar? Deinu you the adai to dinavshe ka'avit, because then for sure he's a partner in the business. He decides he's going to work on Shabbos. That's perfectly fine. You're not switching a tit for tat a Sunday for a Shabbos. He's just working on his own. You tell me you don't need to work on Shabbos as far as I'm concerned. There's no din. They when they entered into the business, they did not stipulate that any work had to be done on Shabbos. And if that was not stipulated, the non-Jew decides to do the work on Shabbos. So then, of course, the Jew is allowed to benefit from what's done on Shabbos.
So
okay?
the Jewish owner says to them, I'm not coming in Shabbos. You want to open Shabbos, but I'm not coming in on Shabbos.
That's correct. That's perfectly fine. Not only that, but even as long as they're working together the rest of the week.
Yeah, apart.
Right. That's correct. They enter into as partners, so then it's perfectly fine without any other stipulation, without any other arrangement, without any other tonight, that would be perfectly fine. Even if it's clear, it says with Moshe, to the non-Jewish partner, that the Jewish partner really wouldn't mind if he worked on Shabbos. Now, Rav Moshe qualifies this, and this is a very important qualification. He says, when it's just a non-Jew doing work. But if a non-Jew is going to be hiring workers, you know, during, he'll be hiring Polim, for example, during that time, and the Polim are going to be hired from funds of the partnership itself, the Jewish partner is considered to be participating in the Avodah Shabbos. That's why Rav Mordechai Bennett in the Parshas Mordechai says that whoever's hired on Shabbos can only be hired from the non-Jewish funds. It can't be from the partnership funds, it has to be from the non-Jewish funds. So nobody does that. So it comes from the partnership funds. Now, how do you justify it coming from the partnership funds? So Moshe says that the way in which you justify it coming from the partnership funds is only when the Jew makes very, very clear, I don't want you to work on Shabbos. Okay, I would prefer that you not hire the workers on Shabbos. And then he goes and he hires the workers on Shabbos anyway, so he takes from the partnership funds. So then Moshe says that's not a problem under those circumstances. Obviously, the partnership funds can't be used on a Scott Shabbos basis. The workers would have to be hired for the entire month, for the entire week, for the entire year, as the case may be. It would have to be blah, blah, blah.
That's the worker. What about product? The wager partner there sees they're running short of merchandise, and he calls up, and he goes and takes a delivery of the Shabbos. Whose funds are spending it? This stuff.
It's all fine. It all falls within the heads of Rav Moshe. Well, as long as that would have to be somehow done by Havla with a delivery person. It's a good point, you know, that you have an account, for example, and then you pay.
I'm thinking of the deceased. We had once a candy retail store where there's a goy, and they had Mr. Starr. But it was very clean and clear. But I'm asking, what happens to these shorter jelly beans? It's a big day for jelly beans. They're happy tapping before Halloween. It's a big seller. He goes and buys it or signs the contract that day for delivery on Tuesday.
Right, so that would, it would be fine as long as you made it clear that you didn't want it to take place in Shabbos and the delivery companies and services were being paid on a weekly or monthly basis. You were paying like a whole bunch of bills together. It's the same as the worker. I'm saying that would be the same din as the worker. Meaning where Moshe says it's permissible as long as it's behavla. So as long as the payments are made behavla, I think that should be permissible as well. Lefi ani yizdaiti, that's the way it would seem. So how does this play out? So you have again a few of these possible scenarios. So one scenario is this kibola scenario, where you have somebody who's, you know, working for you, shall we say, but they're doing it adaita dinapshe. So the Noda Biyuda talks about a case where you have a shop, and there's enough where you get paid on a daily basis. I guess paid, I'm sorry, on a weekly basis. So you didn't explicitly tell him to sit there on Shabbos, but Lemaisa, you're going to get a tremendous benefit from his working there on Shabbos. It's not like if he doesn't sit there on Shabbos, if he's sitting there on Shabbos, it's only for your benefit, it's only for his benefit, it's going to be for your benefit too, because every, you know, if you're working on a field, for example, so the work on the field needs to get done. So what does it matter whether he does the work on Shabbos, whether he does the work on Thursday? The work is the same amount of work. Once it's done, it's done. But here, every single day, it's like a mircha, so you're going to be getting additional profit for every single day, so therefore it's going to be problematic. So says the Noda of Yehuda, this is source number 7 of Avachayim Simna Chavtes, Avayesh Kan Derech Salula Linat Salagami Mechshash Isser. There's a much better way to be able to get out of the Heter, get out of the Isser. Shehem Yifsiku Limanachli Tehenomi Kol Ev Sheyimko Dava Katsu Afilu Puta Achas. That the Nachri should get some sort of a tiny profit from everything that he sells over the course of the day on Shabbos. So if this Nachri worker, he's getting paid money anyway for to be a worker. However, the problem is that this is like a Sfir Yom situation where he's working, his working on Shabbos is really only benefiting you. And as a result, if he doesn't get a benefit as well, it's going to be us. So another view that says the way you can get around it, and this is similar to the case of the Mordechai, the way you can get around it is if we say that for every $100 of sales that you make, you'll get a penny. Says, wow, whole penny.
This is over and above his salary.
His salary. Now, technically speaking, if this was his entire salary, it should be good too. But the point is that it's if he's entitled to a salary, if he already got a salary, and now we just say after the fact, this is. Instead of your salary, you're going to you're going to get this
commission.
So then it just looks a little bit suspicious. It looks like we're just figuring out another way to give him the salary. Say, instead of your salary, you're going to get 2 cents from every single amount that you sell. But don't worry, no matter how much it is, it's never going to be less than X. Okay, so that already sounds like, you know, it's a ruse. Okay, that's a ruse. So therefore, it has to be clear that you're paying him more than what he otherwise would have received. However you do it, you have to make it clear that he's getting paid more than what he otherwise would have received. The Shevet Halevi says something very, very important. This is in Chelek Hei Siman Chof Zayin. He says that all of these distinctions between Kablonos and Sechiros, that's not really the Ikar over here. Those are just different business arrangements. The Halakha doesn't care about the business arrangement. It doesn't care whether the business arrangement is in the form of Kablonos or Sechiros. What it really cares about is whether the Goy is doing it for you, is he your Shliach, or is he doing it for himself? That's the bottom line. It says, Vabe Emes, this is an important principle. Sharish Halakha Zu Eina Total Tolef, the Kablonos of Sechiros, Ela B'Yisoda Kablonos of Sechiros. What is the bottom line in terms of how the arrangement was made? Whether he's a Sechir Yom, whether he's a Kablon, is the bottom line in Adaita Dinafshi of the Shabbos Olo. So you could have a Sechir Yom situation, like the case of the Noda B'Yuda, where it's going to be permissible because he's getting a certain percentage of the profit of what he sells on Shabbos, and therefore Adaita Dinafshe. Or you can have a kablana situation where somebody is renting, you know, the rights to engage in a certain business enterprise, but it's still going to be problematic. Like the Mordechai's case, which is only Mutzah B'Makom Hefseid, it's still going to be problematic if it's clear that you're essentially telling him, I want you to do this business on Shabbos, even though you're going to get a certain percentage, I'm going to get, you know, the rest of the percentage. That's going to be more problematic. So the bottom line is it Adaita Dinafshi Ovid B'Shabbos Olo? Is it, number one, he's doing it on Shabbos, the fact that he's doing it on Shabbos is a Daita Nafshe. We're only makel in a Makom Hefsei situation to bring it about that he's going to do it specifically on Shabbos. And number two, is it a Daita Dinafshe in terms of the benefit that he's going to be receiving on Shabbos? That he knows that by virtue of doing it on Shabbos, even though you're going to get a benefit, he's also going to get a benefit. Okay, so if you look at, so even in that case, if you look at the end of the Shevet Halevi, the end of source number 8, says there can be tzad the yisr. In the Tanaya Skivas Hayashiyav, the Dhamma Shabbos Yomtov, it's not going to be permissible, even if he's getting a benefit, if you tell him, I want you to do it on Shabbos. The Mechas case is unusual in that sense. That's not the general principle. The main thing that we learn from the Mechas case is that there's room to be makel, but Malcolm Hefsei to come up with different, you know, ruses or different leniencies that we wouldn't normally rely upon, but having somebody telling him explicitly to work on Shabbos is not something we would generally do. But the main thing that we learn from that is that there's room to be makom makom hefsek. So in general, if the tenai is that the person has to work on Shabbos, that's not going to be a full daita nafshei ka'avid. All right, and that's something that has to, you know, be borne in mind as well. Now, let's move. We only have 10 minutes, so I want to cover the main. I want to cover Mechira and Shutfus a little bit. Yeah.
Another Shevet Halevi. What if this will affect purchase of stock in the company where you're considered owner and somebody?
Yes, and there are very lengthy shuvas about purchases of stock in a company, and maybe it depends upon whether you have managerial control in the company or whether you're just considered to be an investor, whether you have voting rights, whether you don't have voting rights, and that's a whole step at a rechus that we don't have time to get into this time, but maybe another time.
Right. Some of these issues.
Yes, but that's but the focus there is much more on, are you really an owner? Do you really have the responsibilities and culpabilities of being an owner just because you own stock in a corporation? Generally speaking, the answer is going to be no. And Ramosha will say the answer is no even if you're a majority owner. So the stock situation is a very different story. It may depend upon to what degree you have managerial ability or voting ability with respect to the company. Okay. Promotion source number 9 talks about the bank workers, and he says the same thing, that with bank workers who come in, you can't tell them to come in on Shabbos, but he quotes from the Mordechai. He says that in the event that you have something which is what we call a sakim gedolim, a bank, where they're going to fall apart if you are not able to remain open when they want you to remain open, so he says you can rely upon the hetzer of the Mordechai, and that's a big deal, because what that means is that you're even allowed to do it in a place where there would otherwise be Mari Zion, because people know that the business belongs to a Jew. So he says that, however, v'yitzen lo zeh, the one who works, you have to give him levan mischiuso sheyesh lo below zeh, you have to give him an additional amount that he would get on Shabbos other than his normal amount. because if it's just going to be this normal amount and it's just a new way of configuring this normal amount, then ein la'akzeh klum ve'ein zeh daiti d'nafshei. Rav Moshe says explicitly in answer to the question that arose before, that's why you have to do it in that particular fashion. Now, again, in source 10, Rav Moshe talks about if you're entering into a partnership l'chatchila with an akum, so then that is heter gamor, because there it's not a ruse. You really are entering into the business l'chatchila with an akum, and therefore that's perfectly permissible. But he says, if you look at the bottom of page 3, source number 10, Rav Moshe writes very explicitly that it's not shayach b'shutfus to be matir the akum, to direct the akum to work on Shabbos, to enter into a shutfus lechatchila, where you know you're going to have to direct him to work on Shabbos, because if the nature of the shutfus is such that you're going to have to direct him to work on Shabbos, as opposed to simply indicating that he's allowed to work on Shabbos and keep the profit for what he works does on Shabbos, so then that already is relying upon the heter of the Mordechai, which is only a labor machum hefsed. And who told you to enter into a business for profit purposes when you're going to have to direct there to be chilul Shabbos
l'chatchila? Is that a shutfus?
Even in a shutfus case.
No, because I asked you before the question, if he tells us the shutfus, I'm not coming in Shabbos.
Right, that's fine.
But why is that?
But he's not allowed to direct him to work on Shabbos.
Oh, he can't direct.
He can't direct Shabbos. There has to be the possibility that the Akum has the right not to work on Shabbos. Right. Okay. The other thing that he says is that you have to have a shtar, because otherwise the whole thing's going to look like a chukah v'tlula. So he says you should have it with a shtar, even with a lawyer, like to make it into a fancy schmancy real thing. There was a recent case that just came up where somebody had a shtar Shabbos where they entered into a shutfus with a goy, and they said that the goy is entitled to 1/7 of the profits because he's only working on Shabbos. I think it was a shtar mechira, actually, where the Jew sold the business for one day to the goy and said you're entitled to 1/7 of the profits. And then the non-Jewish partner went to court for purposes of enforcing the contract, wanted to collect his 1/7 of the money. And the Jewish partner said, well, no, you need to understand, the court, Mr. Judge, that this was just a Jewish law document that, you know, is not really meant to, you know, be taken seriously for purposes of civil law. And the judge said, I'm sorry, I see a contract in front of me. The contract is very clear that this is how much he is entitled to, and therefore I refuse to negate the contract. This was a recent case called, I think, Kobe versus Newman, that somebody was kind enough to send me over the last few days. It's a mamash real case. But from Ramosha's perspective, that's a good thing, because that means that the contracts, the Schar Shabbos contracts, or the Mechira Shabbos, Mechira contracts, the Shabbos, are being taken seriously by the court system. In terms of the Shtar Mechira itself, so Ramosha writes in source number 11 that he was very reluctant about the Schar Shabbos because of the fact that it was clear that the people who entered into the Schar Shabbos situations were doing it merely as a ruse. And since they were doing it merely as a ruse, then often the Jews would sit in the store and they would do the chilul Shabbos before Hetzia. Therefore, it was something to stay away from. But he says, if it is real, okay, then if it is, you know, a situation where it's being done, you know, properly, where it's clear that all the revach, all the profit of Shabbos is going to belong to the goy, and you'll be able to have a very careful accounting of that profit. So then he says that would be permissible. However, it has to be in such a fashion that you would be able, like in the shutfus to begin with, you have to be able to calculate what the Shabbos profits are. You need to be able to calculate very clearly what the Shabbos profits are in this case as well. Okay. Now, very interestingly, Divrei Chaim said something that I think was the standard form of most of these Shtar Mechira forms, which Rav Moshe doesn't have. But Rav Moshe says you can mitigate the cost. How do you mitigate the cost? So he says that the Nachri has to, number one, give ribis, because let's say he buys his share of the business for $20,000. Or $100,000. He's not going to pay $100,000, okay? If you're doing it just to avoid Shabbos prohibitions, he'll pay $1. So then he owes $99,000, right? So, or $99,999, okay? So of that amount that he owes, he's going to have to pay ribbis. So the way in which the forms were traditionally done was that the ribbis that he had to pay and the amount that he had to, you know, reimburse or pay to hire the workers, which is all coming out of the Jews' business anyway, so all of that would have to be paid over to the Jews. So they would say that whatever profit was made on Shabbos probably offsets all of the ribbis that he owes and all of the hiring costs that he owes for Shabbos, and therefore at the end of the day, after the mechira is completely done, how much does he really owe for how much does he owe and how much does he get? Zero. Because the entire amount that he owed, namely all the ribbis and all of the operating costs, are washed out or canceled out by all of the by all of the profits that he otherwise would have made. So therefore, he doesn't take home any profits, and he doesn't have to pay anything for the business. So it ends up being a complete wash. So when you see this as a complete wash, you understand why he's very hesitant to gain recognition to this type of a mechira, because it turns out that he's not really spending anything, and he's not really gaining anything as a result. So the shutfus is a much more real and viable notion, because there you really do have partners who are together in the business, as opposed to when something is just being sold. So this is one of the objections that was quoted in the name of Shlomo Miller with respect to the nursing homes. Number one, the person that the business is generally the business is sold to is usually an Aklum who knows nothing about the business and wouldn't be able to operate the business anyway. Number two, which is why it's generally recommended, and that's our practice here in the CRC, that when we allow a Shtar Mechira, it has to be like to some sort of a managing director of the business who's perfectly capable of operating the business anyway on his own, and that there should be some sort of a profit motive with respect to whatever he does do on Shabbos, that he will get some sort of a revach out of it. Okay. Number two, that it be a the other objection with respect to the nursing home is that with respect to the nursing homes, there are very strict laws about who is allowed to be an owner of a nursing home. You have to be licensed, you have to satisfy various tests and various requirements. So the Din of the Mahusa would probably not recognize the sale at all. To the degree that it's important that it be recognized by the Din of the Mahusa, Divrei Chaim doesn't think it's important, but to the degree that it would be important, so that's another issue. And also Chaim Cohn, the Dayan of Breuers, is saying that he thought that was a problem with respect to the sale of the nursing homes. And number three, the whole thing is a Harama Hanikaris, because the entire world doesn't think of the business as being owned by the non-Jew. Which is why, if you look in the Shevet Alevi and others, they say that in all of these cases, where it's a shutfus to somei min ha'ayin, where the shutfus is just not known about because people don't know about the participation of the non-Jew, under those circumstances, it's extremely important to publicize in the newspapers, in the shul bulletins, in Likutei Pshatim, whatever. You have to publicize the partnership and participation of the non-Jew in the business so people will know about it, because otherwise you have not averted, number one, the Maris Ayin issue, and number two, you haven't averted the Harama issue, because then it looks like much more like a Harama. But in terms of the portion that the non-Jew needs to own in the business, it doesn't have to be 50-50. Rav Eliashiv writes this very explicitly as in Chela Gimel Simen Lamed Vav Lamed Zayin. He talks about a form of a Shtar Mechira. It's interesting because I saw in some of the Svarim Rav Eliashiv was quoted as being very adamantly against the idea of Shtar Mechira, but this was, I guess, an early tshuva of Rav Eliashiv, which he says, oh, Shtar Mechira, sure, here's one. And he says that it could be 1%, even if it's just 1% of the business and the profits that the non-Jew is making, that's perfectly fine. And in fact, if you look in source number 16 over here, he has such a shtar where basically it's sort of a 1% division. If you look at the forms, I just give, you know, I asked the office, do we have any forms? So we do. We have a couple of forms. So are these forms that we have consistent with the principles that we have discussed up until now? So one of them is a Shtar Mechira form, and one of them is a Skar Shutfus form. Oh, by the way, so what is the Eitzah that Rav Shlomo Miller had? So the Eitzah that's quoted by his son-in-law is that you don't do a Mechira at all, because the Mechira is not going to work. You do kind of like a Kibola solution, where you have a managing director who hires like a management firm to run the business in general. You don't say you need to run the business on Shabbos. No, you don't have to run the business on Shabbos at all. Just run the business to make sure the business is as successful as possible. Okay? I don't know if there were winks included in the agreement, but that's the form form that he suggests, and a part of running the business as successfully as possible entails, you know, probably that the non-Jew is going to decide to hire people on Shabbos and so forth. But it won't be an issue of shlichus of the Jew, because you part of the deal will be that for every single account that they're able to close, or you know, every single new customer that they're able to enlist, or however they generate the money in the nursing homes, he's going to get the management company will get a percentage of the profits. So since they're going to get a percentage of the profits, therefore that solves the Sechir Yom problem, because then it becomes more like a Kibbolah situation, and it solves the Shlichus problem. So that's the recommendation that he makes. And the third recommendation that he makes is that it be publicized all over town that there is this non-Jewish partner, so everybody knows that this is part of how it is how the business is being set up. So if you look at the two agreements, so the first one says how are we doing it. The first one is a rental agreement. So the rental agreement again is similar really to the sale agreement in many ways. And because we require havla'ah, and what we say over here is that the lessee will receive a bonus from every single sale that will be sold in the business, besides any wages he receives every week as my employee. If it would be a complete sale agreement, it wouldn't be so much that he receives a bonus, but it would be that he receives the profits that are generated on Shabbos completely. And then you give a rental for the above period of time, and that could be, you know, as I said, it could be a small amount, it could be a large amount. If it was a sale, you make it a large amount, that the rest would be payable through ribbons. And this is the form, I think, that has become the recommended form with respect to the CRC, because you don't run into the issues of whether the mechira is really a valid mechira or not. It's easier to validate, I guess, a schiris than a mechira, but that's the form that's used. And you have to, of course, avoid Maris Ayin issues. If it turns out that the business is open within the tchum, so the Gemara Moed Katan talks about, you know, operating within the tchum, or the people know that the business is owned by a Jew, then you have a problem. If it's a mechira, then even if it's within the tchum, you're okay, because you don't have a Maris Ayin issue, as long as everybody knows that the non-Jew is an owner in the business. So you have the Maris Ayin of just making sure that people know about the ownership. The other foreman will...
What does the tchum mean, from Jew?
Sorry? Yes, where Jews live. Where Jews live?
I mean,
well,
yeah, one Jew
lives there. That's where Jews live. One Jew. I mean, even if there's a Chabad. But I guess if there's a Chabad, that's also where Jews live. I don't know. It has to be a place where obviously no Jews live. No Jews. It's like out in, you know, some rural area, some factory that works inside, that operates in some rural area. There are places in the world where there aren't so many Jews, I'm told, you know. But what? Yeah.
Afghanistan,
right. Wyoming, you know. Right. Yeah, a lot of small towns will fall into this category, but it's true. In Achinami, if it's a place where a lot of Jews pass by, it has to be kind of like Yidua that it belongs to the Jew also. If it's kind of like a place the Jew has a business where there happens to be a local, I'm going out a little bit, a limb here, there happens to be a local Chabad, but, you know, they don't necessarily know this is a Jewish factory or whatever, you know, and there are a couple of not so many Shomer Shabbos people there, they're not like paying attention to these things. Maybe that's less of a Maris Ayin, I don't know. That's, I guess every single case has to be examined separately. And the last thing is the contract for sale of business. This is a Shtam Mechira. So Shtam Mechira has a... the Havlah, because you still have to have the Havlah if you're not selling it completely, you're just selling it for Shabbos or whatever. It says the sale is executed by virtue of this document at $10 paid by buyer to owner. Now what's interesting about this shtar is that you're actually selling the entire business for $10, as opposed to selling, you know, for what would be market value and requiring that the rest be ribis, which is the Divrei Chaim form, and also that's the form of the Tshuvas v'Hanhagos, which is source number 17. That's the last Tshuva that I have over here. This one just kind of assumes that you want to sell the whole thing for $10. That's a little bit of a question. But the way in which it's kind of... this form avoids the potential of anything actually getting paid is by saying that the business expenses will be included in the overhead expenses that the buyer will be obligated to account for. And then there's this paragraph which is almost akin to a Shtar Shutfus paragraph. The buyer may choose to determine profits and losses by a thorough counting of business activity and expenses during the above time periods, or in lieu of this, he may receive $5 for each day of the above time periods. If 24 hours elapse and the buyer does not ask for a determination of profits and losses, this will be taken as an indication of his willingness to accept the $5 settlement fee. So here, I don't know, this is a little bit of a question, because I don't know who generated this form agreement. I happen to come across it, but this one seems a little bit more problematic than any of the ones that are articulated by the chuvos that I cited, because this one does not explicitly indicate that money is really going to be collected. It also does not justify really why it's only being $5 a day. It doesn't say, oh, well, he's going to have to pay all of the profits and so forth.
He has to cost the company 1 day's profit, that's fair.
I'm sorry?
Yes, the cost of the company. The company will cost $10.
Yes, yes.
$5 worth. I mean, that's an amazing amount. You get 10 cents.
Right, plus it's a ridiculously high amount, as Ari Kahn points out. So I don't know about this form also, because it sounds a little bit like the person is being urged to do business on Shabbos so that the Jew can make a lot of money, and he's not even making money for every single sale that is conducted on Shabbos, like in the Steelers situation. So this one is maybe a little bit more worrisome. No, I'm just saying, I happen to see the first one I think we have.
As a follow-up, we'd love to have an official here.
Yeah, so I think based on some of these considerations, we'll try to generate a firm. I will end with the most important thing to end with is that these things are not encouraged. As I mentioned in passing, but it really has to be more than just in passing, Rav Moshe writes very, very strongly, and you'll find this in the other, you know, poskim who are, you know, quoted as well, including the Shevet Alevi, that this is often something which is only used as a ruse, to the extent that we would, you know, permit kind of like, you know, this kibolas type of situation or this chivas type of situation. It's really, if the purpose really is to have work done on Shabbos, it's only something that's permissible. Behefse Merubah, the Shuas Manhago says, there's more room to be makol in a situation where somebody is becoming a Baal Tshuva and they happen to have a business, and otherwise they're, you know, not going to know how to acclimate properly to the firm community. So you help them out with a short term until they're able to find some other type of business proposition. So it's something which is appropriate to do, since it does have a basis in halacha based on the course that we've mentioned. It's something that can be done with somebody who's like a Baal Tshuva and the like. But you look in, there are all kinds of horror stories that are quoted by various postgame of people who went into a business where there would have to be business done on Shabbos, and therefore they sold it on Shabbos to a non-Jew, and as a result they lost the business, they lost their shirt, their whole lives were ruined and so forth. There were all kinds of, you know, good stories like that if you're interested in the various farm. And interestingly enough, there's the Tshuva in the Sri Deish where he says he asked the Chafetz Chaim, he had a balabas in his community in Lithuania, and he had a balabas who wanted to engage in a shtar mechira, and he asked the Chafetz Chaim himself, and the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, panam makan, and I don't want to be machriya. So with all the heterim and so forth, this is something you have to be very circumspect about, that really is only allowed for shatz. In fact, you have to determine as well, based on the individuals, bashir heim sham, and to what degree this is necessary for their frumkeit, and they're going to do it anyway, and v'chule. The most important line is the Mishnah Berurah, line number 18. This is an important line for all of us to bear in mind entering into Rosh Hashanah as well. Rabotech b'ashem ve'ena mechapes tzadei kulos al Shabbat ashrav. That fortunate is the individual who does not look for any kulos whatsoever, and who avoids being in any kind of a business which is going to have to be open on Shabbos. On that note, I wish everybody a ksiva ksima tova. Toshinayin hei, tehei shnas, avodas Hashem.
Amen.